If you're looking for the skills and tools to succeed in real estate investing, you've come to the right place. This show is about breaking through barriers, breaking through limiting beliefs, and breaking through to the life that you want to live through the power of real estate investing. You're listening to the Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Rob Brake and Quentin D'Souza.
Good day, everybody. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us again. And as usual, Quentin D'Souza is here with me, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, ready to go.
Where'd you get bushy-tailed from? What's going on?
You don't want to know. Oh, I saw those photos.
What the? Okay. The only photos I have is like I just finished the Three Peaks last weekend with my sons, right?
They were wearing furry coats.
Yeah, it was rainy. Like we did Ben Nevis in Scotland, Scafell Pike in England, and wow. Snowdon in Wales. And my I got all three done. So we did one a day. My oldest son got two completed, and my younger son got one completed. And it was great. It was a good experience together. We had a lot of fun. And
are they close together?
About 5-6 hours apart.
Uh huh.
So we had to do like a cannonball run from Ben Nevis after we've finished it over to England and then over to Wales after. So it was quite a bit of a drive and challenge every day, but it was really good. And, you know, the old man power kind of came through here because I was able to get all three done. And, you know, I think my sons kind of underestimated the challenge. So. But they did well in any case, so it was good. And I'm just working on some refinances right now, and we have a great speaker who's going to be coming on and talking a little bit about that. And I just got a successful cash for keys done on one of my units in a building, so we've been able to actually bring up the rents just in the last 3 months. Another $2,000 on gross rents where we started at about 14,000. So I think we're going to be just above 21,000 now on that, which will be quite good. I'm really happy about that. But that refinance isn't going to happen I got to take a look at the numbers, I believe, in another 3 years anyways. But we're in a really good position on that refinance when we do come due. But yeah, just working on regular stuff, everyday stuff.
Yeah, I don't consider doing the cash for keys thing all that often, but maybe I should reassess where some of the rents are right now, because I'm, you know, I usually take it pretty easy because I want good tenants, but I think that sometimes I'm a little too, like, my rents are a little too low in a lot of cases, so I should probably re-examine that myself too and see if there's anything we could do there.
I mean, in the apartment building space, like I've got 25 buildings, and we, one of our metrics is, you know, being able to get those rents up, and we need to do that beyond rent increases in order to be able to reposition the building for refinance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our goal is to try and refinance out our capital within 3 to 5 years. And we've been pretty successful about doing it, but it really requires us to work on getting our expenses down and our income up. And the only way to do that in a rent-controlled environment like Ontario is, you know, turning over units. And without doing anything illegal, like, or immoral, we like to offer cash for keys and give people the option. And, you know, that seems to have worked quite well in the past. It's a little bit harder last year because rents were up quite a bit, but rents have been coming down, and actually we've been finding it a little bit more successful on the cash for keys side. So if you haven't been doing that, and because rents have been coming down psychologically, it actually is a good position for the renters to go and, you know, look for another unit and have some cash in pocket. So it's worked out quite well in the last few months. Who knows what that will look like, you know, 3 months or 6 months from now, but it's what's working right now. So
that's cool.
Yep.
Everyone listening, go over to breakthroughreipodcast.ca. Listen to all of the 230 some odd shows that we've done over the past years. And there you'll be able to get in touch with the guests as well. And, you know, you can reach out to them, and some of them have very specific expertise and, you know, have left their contact information in the show notes, and they are looking for people to reach out and contact them. So go over to the website. Again, it's breakthroughreipodcast.ca. Then go over to iTunes and leave us a rating or review, please. Really appreciate that for everyone that's done it so far. And if you haven't, please just take 5 minutes and go over and do it. It helps us out a lot. And Quinton, I have, if anyone's looking for this kind of investment, I currently, depending on when this comes out, have a licensed 10-bedroom student rental property in Peterborough that we just put on the market the other day. So if anyone's interested in that kind of investment and wants to hear more, then just reach out to me, rob@mrbreakthrough.ca.
Awesome. Sounds good. You know what we should do one time is underwrite one of these deals. Yesterday, I on my Q&A call with Durham REI members, I was underwriting a 10-unit building, and people really liked that process. So we should maybe do that one time, try and go through some underwriting and see what
they
people...
like the mock process, probably not the real one.
Well, I mean, even if it's something that's like a live deal that, you know, anybody can see on the MLS and, you know, and there's no NDA that needs to be signed in order to
Well, I'd have to leave that up to you for sure, because I certainly wouldn't be able to navigate something like that.
Yeah, no problem. I can get, we can do that on a call. That'd be great.
Yeah, but, we should do that. Just me and you. We'll the next time we record. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. So I'm pretty excited about this next speaker that we have. Our guest is Mike Peters. He has a master's degree from the University of Waterloo in economic development. He's worked for several municipalities as an economic developer, specialty being assisting all business types diversify and expand. He was an entrepreneur in 1999, and you know, he formed a business finance division. He's evolved into managing the commercial mortgage division with Scott Dillingham. I think he's met him through his finance experience. And he's a member of the Dominion Lending Center, expert financial brokerage. And he's one of the 100% focused on commercial agents of the agents that are in that brokerage. So I'm really excited and interested to talk to Mike Peters today. He has a wealth of knowledge, and I'm looking forward to that. So thanks for coming on the call with us, Mike.
Yes, thanks for the invite, Rob and Quentin. I look forward to this conversation and sharing.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Except for Quentin, you got one thing wrong. It says he's the only 100% commercial focused mortgage agent out of the 75 agents.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So,
just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm an avid golfer. Let's start with that. I love golf. That's my pastime. I really, you know, my focus has always been throughout my career assisting small business grow and expand. And, you know, I became an entrepreneur, sold several companies, mainly in the high tech area. You know, when I did cash out, I decided to, you know, get into business finance, find money for, you know, small growing businesses that might need, you know, to double their fleet. They may be an HVAC or new desks and computers, you know, that kind of thing, that kind of business finance or a new backhoe. But one of the products that I proprietarily developed, a client asked for financing software as a service, because when you bundle hardware with a software and you have a monthly software fee, the client wanted to have that as one monthly fee, not just finance the custom built hardware. And this was for water wells. There's something like 800,000 water wells in Ontario that are not being monitored, and they're the source of water for primary source of water for people. So, you know, we developed a system for that, and the company wanted financing. So I scoured the market to see who would do financing of software as a service. I'm dating myself because that's pretty common now. And I was able to align myself with an entity. I then joined the local business incubator down in Windsor, Ontario, to assist the small business in there as a consultant. And they opened up their books to me, and I told them that they needed to consolidate their debt and get a new mortgage. That is how I was introduced to Scott Dillingham. Scott was able to get him a mortgage, and then COVID hit, and the mortgage was conditional on a site visit, and that site visit didn't happen. And as you can imagine, after COVID, their numbers were down, the number of tenants renting space. So anyways, Scott and I hit it off. He asked, Lend City, the name itself lends itself towards more than just mortgages. So we set up a finance division. And then Scott's got a pretty strong marketing engine, and he was receiving a number of commercial mortgage applications. And given my broad background in business, every commercial mortgage is a business mortgage. It's a business loan. It's business focused. So I took over the commercial division and handled all of that. Initially, given his focus as a residential agent, most of them were multi-unit residential properties. Either the client had hit the ceiling that one of the big banks might have, like six properties, and they want to buy a seventh, and so you got to go commercial instead of personal. Others had corps, and we did a lot of business, a lot of refinances of multi-use, and largely down in the southwestern Ontario market. More recently, I'm seeing a lot more business type commercial mortgages, whether that be somebody interested in buying a retail plaza. I've got campgrounds, so I'm working on a number of things. Truly have evolved into all things commercial, and in enjoying it. Each situation is unique, and that's what I like about it. Each situation is unique. First and foremost, I stress, it's my Bible, that I get to know the client first. What are their goals and objectives? And I work with them, to help define that, help define the strategy. Always encourage them to speak with their lawyer or accountant as to what the best framework should be for moving forward to achieve that strategy. And I truly enjoy it. I enjoy getting up. Like, I just got off a call right now. Airbnbs in Mont-Tremblant. Exciting. Five, a brand new development with a hotel. I've got mixed use commercial, large mortgages. They're getting larger. What I'm finding is that the lenders are preferring larger mortgages, just given the volume that we're seeing right now in the commercial space, especially as well in the multi-use residential.
Yeah, I'm kind of I have a kind of offshoot question about that, because what I've seen is that the off of mortgages that are less than $1 million, we're seeing, like, especially if you're going to do something along the lines of CMHC, we're seeing
Yes.
like an additional premium added to the CMB, Canadian Mortgage Bond Rate, of closer to like 2%,
You got it.
as
Yep.
opposed to like larger mortgages. Is that just because the risk is higher for the lender under $1 million? Why do lenders typically have such a high additional interest rate as compared to, let's say, anything above $1 million? Or what are those kind of like points as when they kind of go up?
Yeah, so some of the markets that you can still buy a sixplex for $500,000, Windsor, St. Catharines,
Thunder
Pete,
Bay, yeah.
they're the same amount of work as a for the lender as they are for 2 million. And all lender frontline people have, quotas. And so a $500,000 sixplex in Windsor goes to the bottom of the queue, really does. If the client is prepared to sign that premium, the 2%, and you hit the nail on the head, it is 2 to 3%. Then the bank is getting paid for, they're making money off of that mortgage. I'm finding that clients are just going conventional, because on the CMHC side, if you're retrofitting a building so that you can get the higher loan to value, then it may make sense. But that's a pretty significant investment to redo, baseboards and put railings and showers and skylights on the roof, or you know what I mean? Not
That's
skylights.
something you would also have to do once you've purchased it too. So that would be on like a refinance side, not on the initial mortgage side either. So you've got to either pay the premium or,
So those clients, I encourage them to make the purchase at approximately 75% loan to value is what we could get for a sixplex that's running fairly well. Make the purchase, and then we go through the application process as they do the retrofitting. But on a new build, CMHC MLI Select is the way to go. You're
I
gonna
have a
get
question for you then, Quentin. But well, both of you can probably answer this. Let's say there's a building worth, I don't know, 950,000. Wouldn't it, or wouldn't it almost make sense to say I'll give you a million?
Yeah, it would, but there's fewer and
No,
fewer.
you don't think so, Quentin? He shook his
Well,
head no, but.
yeah, it's the lenders, right? And who you're gonna get. So, like as Mike was saying, it makes more sense to do a conventional mortgage and just get it done rather than try to do CMHC on something like that and get the value up and then go maybe to CMHC afterwards if it's at all possible, right?
Well, I also found that a number of properties, are overpriced, and the clients are going in with a CMHC condition, and that's 3 4 months, and not too many sellers are interested in an offer that conditional on CMHC financing in 3 or 4 months. So in that instance, we try to find them a bridge, get them that initial mortgage. Get them some additional finance for the retrofit, and then go through the CMHC process. But again, five plexes, there's just not a lot of underwriters either that will do CMHC. I've got two that I like to go to, and they're up now to $2 million.
Yeah, it's
Okay,
interesting.
so quick question. Let's roll back and let's talk about somebody maybe just trying to break into this multi-residential purchase. And let's, I don't know, Quentin, let's make up a scenario under a million, and then like Michael, teach us how to walk, like to prepare yourself for that purchase.
Okay, well let's do a purchase price of like 1.5 million, and we that way at least we'll be above a million, so there'll be more lenders that'll look at it, right? And let's say that it's like you're looking to put 25% down, so you're just a little over a million on that. You could go conventional with 25%, or maybe you could, from a debt coverage ratio, maybe at 80% loan to value, we're still at a 1.3 DCR on this property. That way, there's more options, let's say, as opposed to if it were a lower debt coverage ratio and
And I
we
guess
wouldn't
you're
have
not the one that
anything.
would handle that in that circumstance either. So, yeah, let's talk about Quentin's scenario there.
Well, yeah, if you're prepared to keep, I believe it's around 30% of the rents under fair market rent, you can get to 80% with CMHC. But you've got to commit to 10 years of part of your building staying at the current rent.
That's MLI Select. You're talking about MLI Select, right? Okay.
Exactly. And they if the person was to leave that is paying under market rent, they still have to lease that place at that rent. And so that makes it kind of tough, but that's the way to get to 80%. So that's really one of those buy and hold situations to just increase value of the building over time, and take some money out and maybe buy something else. That's what I recommend in that instance.
So I
Go ahead.
think like we've on a sixplex, I just did this. I did a standard CMHC mortgage with a 40-year amortization, but my debt coverage ratio was 1.3 on the sixplex. So I was able to get a higher mortgage, like an 85% loan to value, 40-year am on a standard CMHC, just because my DCR was so
ECR.
high. So I think that maybe one of the things that our listeners may want to be able to know what to do is what is a DCR, and then maybe we'll roll back and then go to Rob's question, because if you understand DCR, then it makes it easier to understand the underwriting part, Rob. So does that sound good?
So, all commercial mortgages, for the most part, are, well, all of them are DCR. That's debt coverage ratio. You've just mentioned 1.3. That means for every dollar of expense that that building, which is a business, for every dollar of expense, it's generating $1.30 in revenue. So it's making 30 cents on the buck. I find that the big banks, they add a bit to they're around $1.35. Whereas the local credit unions I tend to use, I just did a 20 unit apartment building at 75% loan to value, at 1.2, so 20 cents on the dollar. So it all depends on the scenario. But debt coverage, that's how it works. It's if the building is self-supporting, first and foremost, if it's generating $1.30, you're going to get a mortgage. It's hard finding those with, like you say, the rent ceilings in Ontario. I find so many opportunities where half of the sixplex is paying fair market rent, $1,800, and then the other half of the tenants are paying $900, $950. Makes it extremely difficult to get to that 1.2 DCR, therefore a much larger down payment.
So Quentin, so if you run into, because I saw you nodding your head at that, so you've seen that quite often. And is that something then you would just say, okay, I guess there's no deal here? Or in that circumstance, what would you do?
I'll use an example of something that I did as an example. So I on this sixplex that I got the mortgage, I got a $1.3 million mortgage on this sixplex, but I had turned over all six units over the period of ownership. I started off with a conventional mortgage with BMO, and I worked on turning over those units and getting the building up to a certain level. So, and I remember I bought the building for something like 700K. And now I have refinanced the building conventionally in the past, but I recently moved to CMHC, got a 40-year amortization. Because the DCR was 1.3, I was able to get an 85% LTV, loan to value. And then so my new mortgage is 1.3. I pulled out that capital, and I was able to hold on to the property because I turned over all the units in the building. It took a while, but once I did that, then you have the ability to be able to pull out more capital, and it gives you more options.
And how did you do that? Like that is a trick. Cash for keys is one avenue, correct, that you've deployed in the past?
I have lots of strategy. I mean, this is what my business, right? This is what I do. I eat and sleep this. So like when we take over a building, we do something that we call kind of like turning the screws, which is basically we are making sure that people are following the rules of the Residential Tenancies Act. Day late, dollar short, we're issuing N4s. They're not following, they're keeping improper units, doing bad stuff. We want to improve the building, so we start issuing N5s. We want to turn over units just based on what they should be doing, because oftentimes we're buying from mom and pop owners who are too flexible and not doing what they should be doing managing a building. What we find is 10 to 20% of the units will just naturally turn over based on that. Then we might move to focusing on cash for keys on some units. Work on turning over some of those units that way. Those are the traditional way. And then often over time we'll find that other units will turn over. People
Natural
will,
course.
yeah, like it takes a while, but it happens. And it just depends on, over the course of doing this. I've done this for so long. It's not only about turning over units, it's also about reducing expenses. So in this sixplex, we actually implemented a Wise meter and put the water meters or the water of each of the units onto the units themselves. And so as we turned over, we reduced our expenses on the building as well. So we don't have hydro and we don't have water. We just pay for gas. Again, all of that reduces my expenses, increases the debt coverage ratio, and allowed us to take a higher mortgage. So that's just the example on that particular building. This year I've got a 23 unit, a 9 unit, and a couple of other buildings I can't remember off the top of my head that we're refinancing. So again,
Good,
all of the
good.
same things, right?
Yeah, those strategies are sound. You're within the law, and that's
You got to get it done somehow. Now, here's a question then. You would never refinance with the MLI Select program. That would be
Me?
for, yeah,
Never.
never, right? Yeah, it
Never.
doesn't
Well,
work.
no, not because it doesn't work. It does work.
Well,
The
does it
problem
work once you've raised the rents, though?
but the problem is that in a rent controlled environment, you don't want to have rents that the people who do that are short in my this is just my opinion. Okay, and I and Martin, Mike can chime in here. I think that that's a really not a good move unless all you're doing is planning on to hold to that building for infinium and not planning on refinancing it again. Because what you've done is you've capped your upside on the building for 5 years or 10 years, however long you're locking in that MLI Select for. And it's not the purpose, it's a business. The business is to run and make profit, just like
And
any other
grow even.
businesses. And if you're capping it by affordability, doesn't make sense. The government may want that. The tenant may want that. But as a business owner, that's a real stupid move, if you ask me. I think that's not a good move as somebody who runs a business. Now, if all I'm thinking of it is a long-term asset that I don't want to touch and I just want it to be there, it's a great move. Because it's good, cheap financing. I can get long term, but I can get 40-year amortization as long as I bring my rents up on a regular standard CMHC too, right? I
So as
don't.
MLI Select, it's always 40-year amortization.
It's a bit. The benefit of that is not just that it brings down. It actually you can get your debt coverage ratio down to like 1.1 if you use an MLI Select. So you're releasing more capital, and you're getting a higher loan to value. And that's the benefit of that MLI Select. So you're pulling out more capital, but then you're locked in, right? You because of the rents, you have to reduce the total rents that you can ask for if you're using the affordability component. There are other components that you can use, but for affordability is usually the easiest, and they're changing all the time. The problem that I find with CMHC is like you start to work in one direction and then they make a change, and you spent all this time doing this stuff, and all of a sudden they make a change and you're in trouble because now you can't qualify because they've given you 2 weeks to be able to apply, or and lately it's been like right away. Mike, have you seen that?
Yes, it's very frustrating. We've had a couple of deals right at the finish line that we just did not move forward because of changes in policy. It's with CMHC. I prefer to stay away from it unless it's a new build. And
That's the only that's the only entity that actually changes policies quickly.
well, it seems to.
Well, no, I mean, even my lenders, I would say that half of my role is lender relations, right? Keeping current with all of the lenders. And when they have a board meeting, they can switch policy on a dime. For example, land banking, right? For commercial development, you've got an entrepreneur that has a strategically placed parcel of land that he paid $1 million for. He's got an appraisal at two. It's still raw land. You're still only going to get 50% loan to value on the raw land, but he thinks that he's going to get 50% of the 2 million just because appraisal says it's 2 million. That's not the case. And then all of a sudden, the guy's got it zoned for a hotel. The final stage is just getting the servicing, so he needs another $250,000 or $500,000, and the banks just changed their policy on land banking because there's so much of that right now in the marketplace. Sit and hold until the property value goes up, and then wrap up the servicing and the zoning and sell to a developer. But in a lot of instances, these types of clients have inherited the land, and they have no experience. And experience is critical. A bio is critical in the commercial space, whether you're running a printing business or whatever kind of business you're running. And when you grad, your first sixplex is going to be easy enough, especially if you have a maintenance company. That's easy. But when you start talking apartment buildings, you're not going to jump from a sixplex to a 20 unit apartment building without the right team behind you. You definitely have to have the bio of experience with the lenders. Not,
But that could be in the team as well, or
oh yeah, it can be in the team. Like, yeah, definitely. Like if I own a tool and die shop and I want to buy a new piece of equipment, $1 million piece of equipment to start punching out Barbie dolls or whatever the plastic product is that I want to diversify into, it's a business plan, and it's a team that the bank will evaluate it against, not only the financial performance of the company, but also the team that's going to manage it. And that's the same as you scale up in terms of your high density residential. The team is critical.
So, for example, you were talking about land banking and someone coming in and putting in the services, but you, like in your example where the person inherited the property, they could just hire a project manager,
Yes.
right? And so does that change things?
That changes things big time, but they're even more than a property manager. He needs a the contractor to oversee everything. I haven't had a gentleman who inherited four motels, and he wanted to knock one down and put up a condo. He inherited all this. He had no experience. I introduced him to not a property manager, but a consultant, somebody who knows how to do the permitting, how to do all of the work with the municipalities, et cetera, right? Very extensive background, but they don't come cheap. But he needed that because he had no expertise whatsoever. He was running, with the family, single floor motels. And he just had no experience whatsoever. So it's important to have a project manager and then a property manager on your team if you're growing to that kind of scale. The budget's critical because on construction, you're going to be making draws, and you're going to want to make sure that each draw gets the job done. There's been a lot of I've seen a lot of properties that are two-thirds finished because the bank didn't do a very good job on inspecting before issuing the next draw. By the time all the money's exhausted, the building isn't even done yet. So that's why,
Wow.
yep.
You've seen that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the banks were not inspecting at each stage, like steel studs, for
I
example.
do not feel sorry for the developer in that circumstance, though.
No,
Yeah, you
I don't
can't.
either.
Yeah.
But that's again somebody with no experience that like one of them is an old age home that I think it was 200 units, and if you drive by, it's still sitting there, steel stud.
Oh,
You
wow.
can see, yeah. Good opportunity for someone to grab and wrap it up. I think we're going to see a lot of foreclosure opportunities on the horizon with the amount of mortgages, commercial mortgages that are coming due in the next couple of years. You know, the rates are a lot higher than what the folks are paying now that own these businesses. Another thing that I find is that, you know, if you're shopping for business, businesses that tend to be cash related, whether that be a me I mean, there's all kinds, but a mechanic's garage or you know, the couple is retiring, whether it be a restaurant, they tend to as they know they're exiting, they tend to run more cash through the business. You can see the cycle of, you know, profitability, everything's good, and then COVID hit. And their business went down, so that's a legitimate reason for the revenues to decrease was COVID. But they're saying, you know what? I don't want to go through another COVID. I'm going to sell. So they're doing more cash business, and so their books, even after COVID, don't look as good as they did before COVID. And in a lot of instances, the bank want if you're going to buy a restaurant or you're going to buy a mechanic's garage, they want to see that entity's books and. They don't look good. In a lot of instances, it's making it difficult to add a mechanic's garage, and you know, the individual refused to share the books. You know, even car lots refused to share the books. So you've got to be very careful. You've got to have a very receptive seller. They have to provide information, good information, and hopefully, you know, they've been running it correctly, where you know, trying to avoid tax with Revenue Canada and other things that they do to mo put more cash in their pocket for their retirement. That's I'm seeing a lot of that on in the commercial space for what I call boutique retail.
Huh. So
Yeah,
it's not
it's just,
doing them any good, that's for sure, in the long
no, it just
run.
yeah, it's just making it difficult
Now, what
to.
would be the reason for someone to not share the books? Would it be because that's what they're doing?
Yeah,
Or,
pretty
yeah.
much. Yeah, that's what they're doing. They're just taking cash out of the business, and I mean, they have the right to do that, obviously. It's just it you know, they've got the business ridiculously priced at say a Chinese restaurant at $1 million, and the books are, you know, generated 50,000 in profit last year. How are you going to sell that for $1 million?
I
You're
can't.
not.
There's no nobody's gonna buy that for
I
$1 million.
know. I'm seeing a lot of that. I really
Yeah,
am.
so the EBITDA is not there, right? And
Right.
nobody's gonna pay like that type of multiple. So I think like businesses and buying buildings are very similar. It's just one uses EBITDA and one's cap rate. Right, but
Yep.
it's very, very similar. And I'm just curious, what like do you prefer to go with credit unions or the big banks when it comes to financing, real estate? Let's come back to real estate here.
Okay. I may have done one deal in my entire tenure with a big bank. I love local credit unions. They, again, I'm an economic developer by profession. I love local economies. You know, I'm sitting here in the fishing capital freshwater fishing capital of Canada, Wheatley, and I'm just thinking of businesses that should be coming into this town, and it's just it's business oriented for me. It just that's my focus. I'm not sure I answered your question, but
No, so it sounds like most of the time you're going to credit unions because of the flexibility that you're getting
yeah,
in
yes. I
with.
just had one. Their policy was 70% loan to value, and I have a great relationship with this credit union. I said, it's a $3 million refinance on a $4 million building, and she gave me 75% loan to value and a 1.2 DCR. Just because of the relationship, and she knows the
Right.
building, she knows the neighborhood, she knows it's up and coming, and that it's a yuppie. I don't even know if yuppies exist anymore, but it's a haven for young professionals, artists,
Right.
etc. And she knows that. And whereas a decision maker in Toronto with CIBC has no clue.
Well, their
Right.
hands are also tied.
Yeah, with policy for sure, internal
Right.
policy. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah,
very good.
with credit units, they can go up the ladder to the boss. I mean, I've had that happen numerous times and say, "Hey, can we make an exception? Like, I really feel good about this deal," and it happens. It happens. I'm getting DCR loans at 1.15,
Right.
in some instances
With credit unions.
with credit unions. Yep.
Wow, that's interesting. What about I don't know a lot of listeners in the show are also interested in US lending. Like, are you able to get any like commercial lending opportunities for US products?
Yes. Scott Dillingham, Lend City, has set up our U.S. division. I presently have a $7 million hotel in Texas that we're working on. He needs a They've let it run down. It's a foreclosure. He needs another $2.5 million to get it back up to speed. And we're working on that. I have a 10-bedroom, rich and famous kind of home going into a gated community where, a celebrity or will rent the place for a week and invite all his friends, which is what happened at the neighbor's house the other day. So that's a $3 million construction loan. I'm currently one of the businesses that, has always been hot lately is self-storage, working on self-storage in Michigan. I've got a Toronto client that is divesting in Ontario, and he's looking for a medical plaza in the US, either Michigan or Ohio. So seeing a ton of that. It started mainly with residential properties. Right? We've got almost 30,000 lenders. We're part of the biggest brokerage in the US in our lender database. When we get our clients' information and they type it into the application, the top five lenders, given that scenario, pop up with rates. And yeah, so we're very active.
So
I
what about
actually,
smaller deals in the US? Is like those ones that you talked about were pretty
yeah.
big.
Yeah, no, I've done a condo in Lauderdale, a refi condo in Lauderdale, a recent purchase in Memphis, doing a refi in Memphis, and these are single family income properties. As long as they are break even, like not even one to one's good, but break even. We're seeing 30% down. And so they lenders prefer something over a mortgage over 100 grand. But that's kind of the low end. So if somebody's sitting on $30,000 and wants to buy an income property in Cleveland,
You mean $45,000 though, to our audience.
to our audience. Yes,
Yeah, don't
exactly.
forget
Yeah,
that.
exactly. Exactly. I do have clients that are divesting their interests in Ontario and moving it into the US.
Has that scaled up over the last few years? What's your feeling about what's happening with, because I've noticed that as well with different investors that I have interacted with. They're frustrated by the landlord tenant board, frustrated by mortgage rules changes. They're frustrated by additional taxes. They feel like they're being attacked as investors in Canada, and that they're being vilified. So they're taking their money and going where they're treated best.
And that's exactly it. I mean, it's like going to a restaurant in the US where the waitress is bubbly and she wants to be your friend versus somebody who's just throwing your plate down. They're so much more receptive in the US lenders. And they will bend the rules a little bit, if not, I mean, not outside the law, but their own internal rules to get the job done. I'm seeing a lot of that. And it's, I mean, our US program now maybe is a year and a bit old, and it's currently evolving and has become a major part of our business. But the divesting part for me is a recent trend, maybe the last 6 to 8 months.
Do you think the reason for that is that you mentioned that there's 30 over 30 lenders? That's probably got to be a good, like, that's probably the reason for, there
No, we're
being,
talking 30,000 lenders.
sorry, 30,000 lenders. That opens it up a little bit more even than I was thinking. But I mean, like, that the le like there's not that many lenders, in Canada, right? There's very few in comparison. So do you think that has something to do with it?
Oh yeah, yes. The options in Canada are not like I've got some stuff up north, I love going up north, but if the banker can't get to the property within an hour for a site inspection, you're gonna have a hard time getting them a mortgage. So that's part of the problem. So there's in the US, you got a bank on every corner. Different bank on every corner. So anyways, I hope this has been helpful. I look forward to assisting anybody who has interest in any type of commercial mortgage, whether that be multifamily. I mean, we do condos. Condos are a little tricky because of the condo fee, the DCR and some of the other issues with condos, but we do condos at 65, apartment buildings at 75, stretch it to 80. Owner occupied, dentist. We've got lenders that'll do 100% financing for professional services like that, engineering firms, et cetera. Oh yeah. So so it all depends on the type of business you're in.
There's a lot of opportunity. And if we haven't covered it, reach out to Mike and there might be an avenue for you to create an opportunity here. So, Mike, how can people get in touch with you?
People can get in touch with me via several sort ways. Mike@lendcity.ca is my email address. Lend City is LEND City, all one word. And my direct phone line is 226-345-7047.
And we'll put all that in the show notes there so people don't have to memorize it or go back and listen to the recording again, even though you probably should listen to the recording again. It's been a fun show.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. This has been great. How can people get in touch with you, Rob?
Well, they can reach me at rob@mrbreakthrough.ca if you want to talk about Costa Rica. So I am, as always, your Canadian realtor here in Costa Rica. So give me a call and I'm going to find you that dream property that you're looking for, whether, you want to move here like we did. I don't see too many people doing that though, Quentin. Most of the time it's an investment, and for use, a certain portion of the year. So if anyone just wants to learn more about how that works here, give me a call or give me an email, rob@mrbreakthrough.ca. Quentin, how can people get in touch with you?
I'm heading out to Peru next week. I'm doing a trek with my youngest son. We'll be gone for 10 days, but if you want to catch up with me afterwards, you can go to quintindesouza.com and book a 15-minute call, or you can check me out at durhamrei.ca, where I do speaking and do sessions, Q&A sessions around any real estate questions that you have and investing questions. I'm not a realtor or a mortgage broker. I've been a full-time investor since 2013, and just focus on enjoying life right now. I'm not a golfer, but I would be with Mike if on a golf course, I'm sure. But I'm a hiker, so I like to go out
Yeah, it sounds like
and do treks. Yeah, so.
it. Very cool. Or if you're in Peru next week, you can track Quentin down that way.
Yeah, we'll see you in Cusco. If you're in Cusco, check me out. All
All
right.
right.
Okay.
Thank you,
Have a
gentlemen.
great day, everybody. Thank you
Yeah,
for
good one.
listening.
I
Take
enjoyed
care.
it. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.